That was good. Thank you, Bill, for reading that. I had my other computer plugged in for Bible class, and I forgot to switch out the power cords. So maybe now we'll continue on smoothly. And I do appreciate Bill reading that for us, because Matthew chapter 23 is not exactly the most pleasant chapter in the Bible. It's probably the time whenever Jesus was the harshest. You know, he made the cords with whips and drove the money changers out of the temple, but as far as his words, I don't know that he's quite as abrasive anywhere else as he is here in Matthew chapter 23. I didn't have Bill read it, but just a few verses before, back in verse 13, is a scathing one that makes me, it's my favorite one. I really like it, but at the same time, it's extremely abrasive, and at the same time, it keeps me in check as being a minister. But verse 13, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from people, for you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow allow those who are entering in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel around on sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves." Those are not nice words. Those are fighting words, and those are the kinds of words that got Jesus killed. Why they sought so much to crucify him, to end his life, to put down that rebellion that they saw in him, because he was offending them. He was insulting them. He was threatening their influence over the people that they had power over. And so as Bill was reading through verses 23 through 28, these scriptures unequivocally, the reason why I selected them, not just because they were harsh, the reason why I selected them and we're using them in this morning's sermon is because they unequivocally show that Jesus was concerned about the heart. The Pharisees and teachers of the law, the scribes and Pharisees, they were experts at looking right. They were experts at dressing right. They had long, white, flowing robes. They set themselves apart from the rest of society and saying, "We are pure, we are holy, we are separated, look at us." They sought the seats of honor at banquet tables. They sought seats of honor in the synagogue on the Sabbath days of worship. They looked right. They looked the part. I sometimes, being a preacher, can be a challenge because sometimes I see in other preachers what I don't want to see in myself. And I'm sure I have it as well. But some preachers have a certain walk. Some preachers have a certain personality, have certain mannerisms. And usually I can spot them pretty quick. Whether if I'm in a grocery store, if I'm somewhere else, like, that's a preacher. It's got to be. Just the way that he carries himself. I don't know why, and I try not to have any pride or arrogance or raising self up within myself. I fight against that because I see it so much, and it's an easy trap for a preacher to fall into after everybody's looking at me, everybody's listening to me, everybody is paying attention to me, and I have this influence, and I have this position. And it becomes a very easy trap to fall into, and that's what the Pharisees have fallen into. They had the walk. They had the strut. They had the appearance. They had the respect of all those around them. And Jesus said, "It's not worth anything. You look good on the outside, but inside you're empty. You're missing the whole point of what God was after. You're missing what God desired in you." It's impossible after reading the words of Jesus in Matthew 23 to think, "Oh, well, God's okay with the fact that I show up and do what I'm supposed to do, but I don't have that good of a heart." He is not okay with it. That's exactly what he doesn't want. Last week we looked at we talked about standards, them being a flag or a rallying point. Something to believe in, something to put stock in. Now, as ancient soldiers would march out in a battle, they would carry the standard before them. And as Christians, there's a Christian flag, And the white has meaning, so does the blue, so does the red. And of course, the cross is the symbol that stands out, as it should. It's not a bad flag, but again, it's not the one that Peter made or any of the apostles pledged their allegiance to. So it's an afterthought. It's not bad, but it's an afterthought. If there was one true Christian standard, the flag is getting close to it with its symbol, but the one true Christian standard is the simple cross of Christ. Not the literal one, whatever happened to it, rotting, decayed, burned as firewood, we don't know. Not the literal cross of Christ, but what it represented, what it represents for us. It is our standard. It is our rallying point. It is our banner that we march behind. And of course, standard has a different meaning as well. Values, qualities, character. Standards that we want to live up to. And the cross fits both. The cross is the standard we want to live up to. We want to have the values and qualities of the man who was crucified on that cross. And Jesus said, take this cross and follow me. So if there's any standard to live by, it is the effects, the application of the cross of Christ. Again, not the physical ideals, but the spiritual ideals which it represents. It is our standard to live by. And so as we progress through talking about Christian standards, keep that in mind, that the cross is the center of them all. And this week, standard number one that we're going to get into is one of the highest standards. Everything Jesus said, we would count as important. Everything that the Bible teaches, that the New Testament tells us, that the apostles tell us, we would say, you know what? They asked for it. It's what they asked for. It's what we're going to do. And every last command is important, and we would say essential. On the other hand, there's one that is most important. Jesus pointed it out. They asked Jesus, Jesus, what's important? He said, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. If there's one standard, it is the core standard of having the right heart. Having the right heart focused on the right thing. Loving the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. We can condense heart, soul, strength, and mind to those inner qualities. Kind of sum it up as maybe being the heart. Do it on the inside, not the outside. Exactly what the Pharisees failed to do. And that's the one standard. If Jesus said, if there's one thing you do, do the inside first. Be people who are right, who love God with all their heart, all their soul, all their strength, all their mind, and love their neighbor as themselves. Those are inner qualities, not outward ones. And those are the ones that God emphasizes most, that Jesus clearly says are most important. A standard any lower for our lives and it's insufficient. A standard any different from that and we are in the wrong place. I'm going to say this now, I'm going to say it in a little bit. I'm going to repeat it again. But if your heart isn't in the right place, neither are you. Imagine being a young man in 1945. America has been attacked. You want to join up for the army. You believe in freedom, equality, and justice. And all those things that we're fighting for. But then you go to enlist, and you go to the place that has this waved over underneath the building. That wouldn't make sense, would it? If you believe in freedom and equality and justice and rightness, and protecting the innocent and protecting those who can't protect themselves, you wouldn't fly this flag. You wouldn't march behind it. You wouldn't give your allegiance to it. Why would you? It just wouldn't make sense in any way. You take up the standard and you adhere to it. And the reason why you take it up is because you believe in it. Imagine being in 1776 and you believe in the power and the authority of the king. and you saw the colonies as being unruly, and that the leaders of the revolution needed to be crushed. And so you decide you want to fly a flag high. You're not going to fly this one. It would not be your first choice. You would fly the Union Jack from England or another British flag. It wouldn't make sense, again, to adhere to stand behind this standard and yet not believe in its values. There was one person who did that. He's fairly famous. His name was Benedict Arnold, one of America's first traitors. That's how he's remembered. Someone loyal to the king, someone loyal to, you know, the standard that was in that place. Well, he didn't belong with this standard. He was flying the wrong flag. It's inappropriate to wear the term Christian if we're not living up to the standard of Christianity, especially the core ones. Again, they're all important. Every last standard, every last command, every last value that we read and learn about in Scripture from Jesus and from his apostles, all immensely important. And if you don't want to follow them, you're in the wrong place, but especially if it's a matter of the heart. Because it's true, we might not follow in every way, even though we know that we should. But think about someone in service now to America. They might not agree with everything about Barack Obama. And after the election, if Mitt Romney wins, they might not agree with everything that Mitt Romney does. But they believe in some higher, stronger values behind them. That's why they're in the service fighting for our country. Not necessarily because they align 100% with the current commander-in-chief, but because the core values are the same. The core values there, the ones of freedom, of equality, of protecting the rights of the innocent. If the core values weren't there, they wouldn't be fighting. Well, if our core value of understanding that Christianity is a matter of the heart, if that's not there, why would we lift up the cross of Christ as if it represented our values? Again, the greatest command, the biggest principle. This is the most important thing that someone claiming to be Christian can stand up and acknowledge, to recognize. It's not about outward appearances. It's about being right with God on the inside. And so if we don't agree with that, find someone else to fall in with. You're flying the wrong flag. You're underneath the wrong banner. You're living by the wrong standard. Again, the Pharisees, religious, obviously following God. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 23 saying, woe to you. He's saying, are you dense? Put it in a modern colloquialism. Or maybe, are you a traitor? Here you are trying to represent God and you've missed the one thing he wants most. To be right where it counts. Woe to you. Go through it again. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. The idea of hypocrite is being different on the outside than what you are on the inside. For you tithe the mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup of the dish, but inside they are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the dish so that the outside of it may become clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. why bother to stand up for and represent the standards of God if you aren't going to get the one most important thing right? Why bother to cast your allegiance to Him if you're just going to show it on the outside? And especially with Christianity, why bother following the cross if you aren't wholeheartedly invested in it? There's not a real advantage to it. A cross represents sacrifice. A cross represents pain and suffering. The cross represents persecution. Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. He wasn't saying, let's go have a party and have fun. It's going to be hard. So why would you do it if you weren't committed to the one you were following? Why would you do it if you were just wanting to put on a good show? The apostles had scattered. Doug read for us in the Gospel of Mark. The apostles had scattered. Jesus was carrying his cross. They got a man, Simon of Cyrene, to carry that cross for Jesus. Now we look back on Simon of Cyrene, and like we know his name, not much else. But we think, oh, what an amazing privilege to carry the cross of Christ. Wow, to be able to say, no, I did that. I helped Jesus in his most desperate time of need. But I can pretty much guarantee you he probably wasn't thinking that when they dragged him out of the crowd, put that cross on him and whipped him and told him to get going. It wasn't advantageous for him to do it. The cross was heavy, and he would be identified with this enemy of the state who they were putting to death. I doubt they had volunteers jumping at the chance to do it. They had to pull a man out and said, you're going to do it. Because Roman soldiers definitely were going to carry Jesus' cross for him. Make one of these other Jews do it. Why would someone lift up their hand to volunteer to carry the cross of Christ just because they wanted the attention, just because they wanted the power and the glory that came with it and the admiration of men? Because you're not going to get it. You're not going to get any of those things. The only reason to volunteer to carry the cross of Christ is because you want it to be your standard, because it is a matter of the heart. You are committed in the heart, regardless of what it looks like on the outside. If we don't believe in this core value, that God wants the heart, then we're wasting our time. So again, I say, if your heart's not in the right place, neither are you. If you're going through the motions with no intent to have the right heart, with no intent to be right with God where it counts, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the way out. This is not the place for you. Now, nobody's getting up and leaving. That's a good thing. Thank you. Because I think the reason you are here is because you do love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul, your strength, and your mind. We're trying to get better at it. We know we have a long ways to go, but it is a matter of the heart. Because honestly, you probably have better things to do than come and hear me talk. Come and sit in hard wooden pews. And so the fact that you are here shows, potentially, hopefully, we are seeking to have the right heart. But some of you might say, well, that's a little bit harsh. It's at least good that they're here, right? Let's say their heart's not in it. They're just wanting to go through the motion. It's not too bad that they're here. We don't need to run them out. Well, how would you like to be in the trenches in World War II with a Nazi person next to you? That's not only foolish, I mean, it's dangerous. How would you have liked to have been in the Revolutionary War and been assigned, to bunk with Benedict Arnold? Not pleasant. Not what you would want. There is a danger to it. There is a problem with it. Think about Ananias and Sapphira. At least they brought some money. Acts chapter 5. They were bringing a gift to the church. Well, that's, you know, at least they were doing it. Could have been worse. God says, no, couldn't be worse. Their heart is not in it. They have lied to me, and they will pay with their very lives. Now, I do have to bring up Philippians chapter 1, verses 15 through 18. Because here Paul is saying, there are others who are preaching Christ for different motives. They're doing it for personal gain or to make Paul look bad. And Paul's view is, Christ is being preached, let it be preached. I'm not going to stop them. I'll even enjoy the fact that they're preaching, even if they're doing it out of wrong motives. And that was the task being done at hand, I think. But as far as who is in our number, who are counted as the saved, who are recognizing each other as brothers and sisters in Christ, again, the heart has to be the standard. A standard we can't judge. I can't judge another person's heart. The most we can see is what we do with our outside. But we need to emphasize it enough that it is known. If your heart is not in it, you're in the wrong place. Paul talked about leaven. A little leaven infects the whole batch of dough. Jesus talked about it as well. It's where Paul got it from. And in Luke 12:1, Jesus specifically said, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. He said, don't let it in. Because he probably could have. Jesus could have let the Pharisees in. They were probably very interested in what he had to say whenever they brought up the question of divorce and remarriage. Jesus came down on the side with the Pharisees. They were the conservatives. They were the ones who believed one wife for life. Whenever Jesus was tearing down the Sadducees and their disbelief of the resurrection, Pharisees were right there cheering them on. Yeah, put it to them, Jesus. So Jesus had a potential ready-made following right there with the Pharisees. Whenever they came out and heard John the Baptist preach, and whenever they came out and heard Jesus preach at the beginning, I think it was very likely that they were interested. What can this guy do for us? If we join in our lot with him, maybe we can get some stuff taken care of. Maybe we can stir things up. We can, you know, put things right that need to be put right. Because they were definitely all about living this life of allegiance and righteousness before God. Not too far off of Jesus. But as they came to Jesus, he said, woe to you. And that's a strong statement. He's telling them where to go. Woe to you. He's saying, not underneath my flag. Not in my kingdom. You don't belong. Not because they weren't righteous enough, but because they didn't have the right heart. And no intention of giving the right heart. Our hearts are faulty. My heart is faulty. I don't have the best motives all the time. My heart is far from perfect. I love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. The all part's the tricky part. And I can't say every single day that I'm fully 100% doing it. But I at least know I need to be, and I'm working on it. I intend for my heart to be right with God. If that's our intention and that's our effort, then our heart is right with God. But if we have no intention of making it inside, make it a part of who we are way down deep, if we just want it to be on the surface, again, we are in the wrong place, and Jesus has no interest in us carrying his standard. I'm going to offer the invitation now, but I'm not done. I'm going to throw you a curveball this morning. Marion, too, the song leader. I tried to warn him. Hopefully, he'll still go smoothly. But I'm going to offer the invitation now. And the invitation's always open. It doesn't matter when I offer it. It really doesn't matter if I offer it. There are some places I've been where the preacher did not offer a specific invitation. But the thing is, do we know about the salvation offered in Christ? more important to know that that's always open rather than putting it at the end of every sermon. And really, you can come anytime. Here's a hint. If I'm getting long-winded and you want me to shut up, just start walking down the front. I'll stop. I'll see what you need. I might have prayers, baptism, right then and there. Just stop me dead in my mid-sentence, please. You know, whenever you feel convicted to come to Christ, don't let anything slow you down, including my long-winded sermons. So there's a little hint. But whenever we think about being baptized, we think about responding to the invitation, it should be with our heart. If it's not, don't bother. If it's not a matter of the heart, if it's not a dedication of the heart, then go home and take a bath. And use some soap and shampoo. You'll accomplish more. So whenever we stand and sing, would implore you to come with your heart. Because there have been some that have come, you know, grew up in the churches of Christ, and no doubt over the years I've seen people come up for the wrong reasons. I've seen them come up to get attention. I've seen them come up maybe to manipulate a certain situation that was going on. Kind of a race to the front. Whoever got there first and got their words in and their viewpoint in, it kind of, you know, could skew the situation in their favor. Not going to point out any specific instance because it is a matter of the heart, but no doubt over the times that I've seen people do it, I can guarantee it hasn't always been with the right motives. It hasn't always been with the heart. At the same time, I know this one occurs because it happened to me many times. Someone who holds back and stands still when their heart is telling them to go. Neither one is loving the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, strength, and mind. The one who comes for the wrong reasons or the one who stays and stands still for the wrong reasons. Both are wrong because it's the heart that Jesus wants. So that's my invitation. I'm not going to stand and sing just yet, though. Because I want to mention a couple of ways in which the condition of the heart is worked out. How it presents itself in our life. Matthew 23:23. The very first verse that Bill read for us. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin, and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Mercy and grace are not just doctrines to be believed. I believe that Jesus died on the cross for me and is offering me mercy and grace to me. That's good. That's a great confession. And if you hold that belief, hold it tightly. But grace and mercy is more than that. Grace and mercy is more than a doctrine to be believed. It's a way of life. God doesn't want people who just believe and understand Jesus' grace and mercy. He wants people who are filled with it. People who show it. People who live grace-filled lives and show mercy to their fellow brothers and sisters. And that's hard to do if your heart's not in it. It's easy to live lives of righteousness. It's easy to have religious pomp. It takes a lot of work. But it's easy because it doesn't take the heart. What takes the heart is someone who lives a life, a mercy and grace-filled life. And I say this morning, and Lisa got up and went downstairs. She's back now in the back. But have you showed mercy and grace today? I tried really hard this morning to have everything done last night so that I wasn't in my too often normal Sunday morning mood. Sunday morning, I have a lot to do. And that's when the stress probably builds up the most. And I'm not always mercy and grace filled in my interactions with my family. That's when I might be shortest, most impatient, most unwilling to bear with them and help them and take part. It's all about me, me. I've got to get me dressed. I've got to get me ready. I've got everything lined up. I'm done and ready in time so that we can start. And I'm sometimes haven't done what I needed to. And so I'm putting in the last pieces and running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But it comes out in my attitude. And Lisa often says, I have a hard time listening to you preach when have you been a jerk that morning. And too often I have. Because mercy and grace isn't just a doctrine to understand. It's a life to live. So how have you showed mercy and grace today? Again, knowing I was preaching this sermon, I tried really hard this morning to be better. Maybe keep trying to be better. But have you showed it this morning to your family? Have you been merciful and graceful with them? So much more important than getting dressed and showing up and sitting in the pew. That's what God truly wants. What's in your heart. And another way that the matter of the heart works out is with sacrifice. What you give up for the sake of others. And this is where our standard comes in full. If we're going to live by the standard of God, raise up His banner, His symbol, which is the cross. I'm not literally holding one in my hand, but lifting up the ideal of the cross. I'm lifting up the ideal of sacrifice. And with sacrifice, there's no advantage in pretending. Because sacrifice is all about what you give up. And if sacrifice is something you're conscious about, that you work on, that you desire, it's a good indication that your heart's on the right track. A good indication you are where you belong. You're underneath the right standard. You're beneath the cross of Jesus.